that. And I think it are at, that at it. Try
Jeff
that again.
Broke.
I'm so excited.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Interrogang podcast. This week on another releases-focused episode, we discover some of the fun experiments and adventurous concoctions that a few Type Foundries published over the summer and in the last week. Just don't start playing that song from Greece about summer loving. I'm Kyle Reed, along with my good friend, your Interrogang co-host, and a well-spaced man who needs little additional kerning, Joshua Dick. Hi, Josh.
Well, what? How could I ask for a better introduction than that? I did shave for this podcast, so that's
good. You can really hear
it. What is the human equivalent of kerning? Would it be shaving? Like, what are you, like, nudging?
I feel like the pandemic had us socially distanced, and that was, I think that's the equivalent. Yeah,
I see. So a pandemic socially kerns us.
Yes, I would say that's true.
Okay, we should have adopted that instead of social distancing. It should have been called social kerning.
It probably would have been more popular.
We all would have been better off for it.
Well, let's go. These are the releases from week 36, 2023. So, Josh.
Yes.
We've got types.
Yes.
We've got fonts. We've got whatever you want to call them.
We've got my love. Who could ask for anything more?
That's right. In fact, we have so many that this releases-only episode will not only cover releases from this week, but a few highlights from the last handful of weeks going through back into the summer.
Yes, please.
First of all, I'd love to start out by highlighting an all-new Foundry to debut this summer while we were out. A Dot Below. The new company is, quote, committed to exploring the diversity and multiculturalism of typography by offering fonts in multiple scripts, especially those for underserved communities. They've released three new type families in their debut this summer. Number one is Fixo, a uni-width type family with pipe bend details. Number two, Luder, a contemporary approach to the Schwabacher black letter style.
Mm-hmm.
I know how much you love a good black letter, Josh.
I most certainly do.
And number three is Spica, the Foundry's flagship contemporary serif offering with sharp details and support for over 290 languages. Spica is a truly handsome typeface, and it's great to see that they've put in so much development on this. It's a real bellwether of where the contemporary serifs are headed, I think, and does some pretty cool typographic gymnastics too.
And it's worth noting that a Dot Below is including extended character sets for African languages and Vietnamese, Greek, and Cyrillic, and working to expand into Arabic, Hebrew, Armenian, and Georgian. So it's nice, you know, we don't always highlight non-Latin fonts to
right.
their fullest extent on this podcast. It's great to see that, and so many fonts do have extended character sets. It's great to see that a new foundry is really setting out with this as part of their mission statement.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the focus. I'm intrigued to see how far that goes with their Luder family.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It's the black letter. Can you imagine trying to apply the black letter style to a whole bunch of other types or other languages? And
I can, and it makes me downright giddy. So I really would love to see all the ways that can go.
Full support for a Dot Below. Do check them out when you get a chance. Next, we'll head on over to Future Fonts.
Yay.
For one of their newest arrivals, Backslanted.
Yes.
Josh, in the same way that you can't resist a good black letter, I cannot resist a good backslanted type.
With good reason.
And this thing goes extreme with it.
Yeah.
It's essentially a variation on a theme. The family is more of a collection of three fonts that explore the concept of backslantedness. Two sans serif typefaces, regular and super backslanted. And a script, which plays out really interestingly as well. The backslants are extreme, they're experimental, and quite honestly, utterly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what makes these fonts attractive. The designers at CSTM Fonts say, the series is to be supplemented by other styles like serifs, black letters, and probably other kinds of typefaces drawn with the same tools. Can you imagine this, Josh? A back slanted black letter. Say
yes,
that 10 times
yes!
fast.
Do it.
It's going to be nuts if they ever do it. I'm so stoked for this as an arena to play around in. And of course, on future fonts from CSTM, it's going to be played around in. I think it's going
to
be great.
Room to play around with. All right. So first of all, backslanted black letter, backslanted black letter, black.
Ooh, yep. You can't do it.
All right.
It's hard.
Second, let's talk about the script version for backslanted. Because the idea of a script backslant, in my head, you just take script, which should have kind of a little bit of a of an angle, and you just turn it the other angle. That is not what they've done here. This is they've almost kind of entered into the black letter arena with their script version. And it's delightful. My favorite part is in the capital B, and it exists in other letters, but where the base of the B is actually vertical instead of horizontal, they've just taken the triangle that is created and put it on the wrong end. And it's it's such a delight, and it really is venturing closer to a angular, blocky black letter than it is a script. But I love calling it a script because it injects all of that into one thing.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of like an alternate dimension, like fourth or fifth dimension, where suddenly, you know, the rules of type start breaking because you are in such a distorted space. So yeah, yes. The B has a backwards thing on it, and you know, you're gonna have to find solutions for making recognizable letter forms in a space that really is hostile to that.
Distorted space, hostile space are great ways to describe. It's like the rules of typographic gravity have gone away.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're in a whole nother dimension of interstellar space right now. Now for some heavy hitters. Typofonderie released Arbale. Arbale is a hybrid typeface that brings together various modernist influences and vernacular lettering of geometric inspiration from the 20th century. It is designed in three atmospheres, the Foundry calls them. The modern atmosphere, that's the default version. The universal atmosphere. And the vernacular atmosphere. I think there are subtle differences between them, but overall, really cool ways of just having a little diversity to certain letter forms that all fit into a typographic system. Yeah. This Geo Sans typeface is a real throwback to the early experimental days of Futura, and a boon for the French Foundry to release, I think. Typofonderie is most famous for beautiful historic serifs, mostly French, if you can believe it or not. So it's really cool to see them get playful with a sans here. It's quite a nice foray into that genre for them.
Yeah, Arbale isn't so much a super family as it is a universe. It kind of it's the MCU of geometric sans. The design theme persists through its atmospheres, but it's all of those atmospheres are on its own journey, and then they all come together to form the Avengers. And I also even feel like the weights and the italics do this too. It felt like each weight, each italic has its own vibe.
Yeah.
And they describe those atmospheres on the website as tones. Mm-hmm. Is the term tone common? Like, because if it's not, I think it should be, to describe different subfamilies.
Yeah.
Because that's really what they are oftentimes in font families. They are tones.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's an underused perspective to come at typography with, and it's done exquisitely here in Arbale. But yeah, the idea of tonality, something to really explore. I think we should explore that on this podcast and try to have a better understanding of, it's not optical sizes. It's not something technical. It's a feeling or emotion. Yeah,
it's a mood.
Perfect. Yeah.
An atmosphere. All of those words perhaps are simply too vague, but when they apply, they're the right word. And I think it's right here because each version, it's almost hard to see them all within the same family until they're right next to each other because they are so tonally different.
Totally. Well, it's really beautiful. It's obviously a lot of work. Arbale, quite a good release from a classic French foundry, Typofonderie. Münchenstein. Munchenstein is a new project from Typotech that brings the forgotten typefaces of Max Meidinger, the designer of Helvetica, back from the fray. The Foundry says that Swiss type designer Max Meidinger is primarily recognized as the designer of Helvetica. Nicola Durek, fascinated by Meidinger's lesser-known typefaces, has now created the Munchenstein font family, bringing together Meidinger's first and last typefaces. Kind of a nice parody there, don't you think, Josh? There's this like beginning of Max Meidinger's career with Helvetica, and then the end, which nobody knows about. I didn't really know about it.
It becomes a nice review of the man's work.
Yeah, it turns out he's not a one-hit wonder. He actually did have other typefaces that he published. Right. And this is a great jump into that world. There are three subfamilies here, Display, Text, and Slab, which is kind of amazing that this Western-looking font slab thing here at the end came from the same mind as Helvetica. Yeah. It feels out of place, but it is a Meidinger design and needs to be included in this collection. The text and display options, though, are rather boxy, rather modernist in a Euro-style kind of way, and absolutely exquisite examples of type design thinking from another era.
You know, we've talked about on this podcast the idea of what, like, modern replacements to Helvetica or Arial or what have you could be, or should we be looking for those? And this could be an interesting pursuit. This could be an interesting starting place, going back to the source, you know?
Yeah.
Fool me once and all that. Fool me once, shame on Helvetica. And then we look for to the man for inspiration for what could be kind of the slight variation. And I don't know if Munchenstein it provides that, but I like this idea that there could be the lost fonts of the designers who made the type that we use a lot now to as a starting place.
Like, did Caslon have a folder of started fonts or something like that? And not just Caslon. I assume he did, but I don't really know.
It's a cool place to look.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, Josh. I think that the source material is very rich and it provides a different perspective, not only on Helvetica, but on the man who designed it.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a good time, look no further.
Who isn't?
Because this next one sums up the summer vibe with Flourish. Melvis Type released Smilina, a jovial script typeface. It's actually a brush script typeface derived from quick handwriting infused with marker script touches. It's kind of specific, but it feels like lettering, the kind you'd get in an ad for asbestos or something in Life magazine circa 1968. You know, it's fun, it's bouncy, it's got an attitude that makes it appealing. it's a script with a smile, I guess, and that's hence the name Smilina. This kind of style is not easy to reproduce in a typeface, you know, this lettering approach. But I think Melvis Type has pulled it off here. What do you think, Josh?
Well, I don't know if this is quite the font I would choose to sell my asbestos, but I do think that this has the opportunity to be the next great handwritten font. It has that vibe of that that script font that you see on a lot of, you know, kitschy, weddingy or welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
Home is where the heart is kind of the things you can buy in those kitschy stores. And I think there's something to Smilina that's a little bit, it's refined, but it's got that vibe. It's got that fun. You called it jovial. It just, if you're looking for that handwritten style, this is a kind, happy version of that. And it could be the next big wedding invitation font.
I think it's got a lot of quality to it. Melvis Type certainly put some time into the details here. With this kind of lettering style, it's common to have a really drastically bouncy baseline.
Yeah.
Where letters are really different from each other on where they land.
That is not true here.
This doesn't go too far down that road. It still has that bounce without being like kitschy playground type. It's legitimate on the handwriting line. Yeah. So I think well-balanced style notes here from Melvis Type.
Yeah.
And this brings us to the end, Josh.
Oh.
Lastly, Colophon published Parent this week, This is what they have to say about it. Partly inspired by old-style serif typefaces, a more covert origin for parent was found in an image from Adrian Frutiger's Typefaces, The Complete Works, where outward strokes referred to as daggers had been manually taped to letter forms to retain sharp edges through the printing process. In a reinterpretation of this functional characteristic, a specialized, quote, ink variant uses a combination of extreme incisions and reverse tapers to create unique curling forms, simultaneously facilitating the correct rendering of a type at the most extreme small point sizes, while also producing ornate and purposefully dramatic details at large point sizes. That is an intense description of a very specific look for this typeface. This is a typeface with spikes on every corner. Mm-hmm. And negative versions of those spikes in every notch or ink trap. It essentially just makes for a pinched and pulled and kind of puckered look to every single letter. This thing is a true commitment to an idea. It's perhaps not the most brand-friendly typeface out there. It has this experimentalness to it, which is definitely a word. But it's a beautiful thing in its own right, you know? Like, I think it's worth investigating these kinds of wild ideas in typography because it could lead you to your next idea, and that is truly original. So these daggers are a really cool feature, and I kind of wanted to talk about them really quickly. It's really like the anti-ink trap.
Yeah.
Back in photo typesetting days, these daggers were placed at the corners of most typefaces so light wouldn't round the corners. It would be these, you know, big film mats with your type on them. And they would project light from the back and take a picture of that light coming around the stencil of the typeface. Mm-hmm. And on that film that you would, on the photo that you would take, the light bouncing around the very corners of each letter form, of each type, would kind of round that corner a little bit. So you, in photo typesetting days, you had a lot of very soft looking typography. These daggers were placed there, so the light would bend around those daggers into a perfect corner. And it's just a really innovative, idea to for a very specific process that doesn't really exist anymore. But that idea has really been distilled in Parent.
Yeah,
it's really cool. So removed from that context, the daggers feel extreme and unnecessary. But I'm really intrigued to see where this one goes out in the world because it is such a unique idea.
And it's cool to capture that in your digital design.
Yeah, there's so many people that have really relied on ink traps as a design feature, and nobody has done daggers.
No.
And it's cool to see it out there finally.
I do like your description as the anti-ink trap, the opposite to the ink trap idea. And I do think that their ink version is funky for it.
Yeah.
But those daggers did get me thinking, and I want to ask you.
Sure.
Just in general, in life, what's your favorite serif quirk? What's something you want to see more of, a la the daggers in Parent? What do you want to see coming out of your fonts more?
Oh my gosh.
So to speak.
That's a really good question, because serifs can take on so many different forms.
And we've seen all kinds of quirk.
Yeah.
Go on.
I mean, I think a lot of typefaces have jumped into one area of this or another. Some people have rounded them. Some people have just tapered them, curled them, whatever. I actually, when Canela came out from Commercial Type, I was very excited about that because it felt like a refined version of a flared serif.
Right.
And I hadn't really seen that before. Most flared serifs end up looking like long trumpets or bell-bottom jeans. Mm-hmm. You know, like they have a weird a slope to them that's a curve. But Canela did it in straight lines, and it made it feel incised or carved in stone.
Yeah, yes.
And I like that as a serif approach. So I want to see more of that, if that's what you're asking.
It sounds between Canela and Parent, you like the physical type creation inspiring the digital creation. You like to see a connection. I appreciate that.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Yeah, there is a reason for it to be not just a superfluous yes. decorative design feature. Yeah.
Well, my answer is completely superfluous design features. I have a practical answer and a not practical answer. My practical answer is I like to see like a droop or a curve, kind of something like DJR Glyptic, the Glyptic, like, doesn't have to be the full curly Q, but just a curvature to your serif where it feels like it has drooped or melted.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. My not practical answer is I would love to see serifs kind of transform into that font's set of dingbats. Like, I want to see a serif just kind of transform into an arrow or a finger pointing or some bizarre image icon that does not belong as the serif. I don't know why you'd want it. I don't know why you'd need it. But I kind of like the experiment that you could integrate your icons, your dingbats, just on the serifs of your letters.
That's revolutionary thinking there, Josh.
Thank you. And that is what I am here to do. I am the revolutionary.
Yes.
Lest you forget.
What a visionary you are for type. I feel
wow.
He said
that's
dryly.
The pull quote of the century. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
Well, when you start your foundry, I expect that to be the most, your flagship design.
I think I have to call it Visionary Foundry now.
I think you do. I think you just started one.
Well, I'll get the trademark process going.
Well, that's it for this week's Interrogang. This episode was edited by Andrew Spheris, who also provides most of the original music you hear on our episodes. The music you are listening to right now is Cut It Loose by Max Band. The Interrogang is a production of Proof & Co. Visit our website at proofco.xyz for links to all the digital products we have to offer. Follow us on X at proof_and_co. On Instagram at proofco.xyz, or drop us a line via email at hello@proofco.xyz. If you have any thoughts on what we discussed in this episode, have any topics you'd like to hear discussed on a future Interrogang, or if your preferences are often superfluous, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the podcast, and of course we hope you are, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month by following the link in our episode notes. Your support helps us expand what Proof & Co. and the Interrogang have to offer. As always, thanks for being a part of the Interrogang. We will see you next time.
Should we start doing, like, purposeful cold opens and then at the end be like, live from New York, it's the Interrogang!
You want to do that in this time of our holiday episodes? I think that sounds great.